Hi, I'm Mary Grace Almandres, the Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion. Welcome to the Lonely Campus podcast, as presented by the Office of Diversity and Inclusion. This show is hosted by our administrative fellow, Amy Messersmith, and features students just like you who share stories about the challenges and triumphs that come with trying to find your place on Syracuse University's campus.
Hi, everybody. This is Amy Messersmith. I'm an Associate Director for TRIO Student Support Services here at Syracuse University, and I'm also an Office of Diversity and Inclusion Administrative Fellow. My project is a podcast series called Lonely Campus, and my project is a pop-up podcasting studio. And so today we are popping up at 113 Euclid, and I'm super excited to be sitting here with Nate LaForme. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for inviting me.
Fantastic. So, Nate, why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about who you are, how you got here, what brought you to Syracuse University?
Well, my name is Nate. I am a transfer student who came from the Seneca Nation. I transferred to SU last year. And that's how I got here.
What drew you to SU?
I really liked the aesthetic of the university, like the old buildings, the sort of academic feel to the place. I liked the land here. It's like hilly. I've always liked hills, mountains. The old buildings were nice to visit. It was my dream school, so I've always wanted to come here. I don't know what else to say about that.
Do you mind sharing a little bit about your academic interests and what you are studying here?
Sure. So I'm in philosophy right now. Philosophy is like it deals with really abstract concepts and how to think about those. So I applied to philosophy because of that. I like thinking abstractly. My ultimate goal is to transfer to computer science because I like information and I like solving problems and math and building things. So those two are a few of my interests. I also have interests in human cognition, like learning what thinking means, learning about how to build those things in terms of machines that can think, like artificial intelligence, I guess. So all of those things together is why what I'm basically interested in.
Interesting. I know that you said that you were a transfer student. Mm-hmm. And so I think this question might land a little bit differently as a transfer student, but do you mind sharing a little bit about maybe what you imagined college to be like or what you imagined coming to SU would be like?
I didn't really know how to approach, because it's huge compared to my other institution. Like we're talking five times the size, maybe, because there's only 1,000 students at the other, but there's 20,000 here. The math doesn't really match up there. I just realized that. So imagining how to come here was really, really difficult. Like, this is the most people I've ever been around. Like, growing up on a reservation, you don't meet a lot of people, you know? So it was really intimidating because there's a lot of rules on college campuses that you have to follow. Like, you can't park in this spot, but you can park in this one, you know? You can't move in earlier than this time, but not later than this time, you know, just arbitrary, meaningless rules like that. So yeah, that's how that went. But it was fine.
I'm just kind of curious, how do you navigate having to live within these different rules all of a sudden?
It's pretty rough because, it's kind of like you have to learn a new language, you have to learn a new culture, and a culture shock type of thing where, you don't know how to act, but everyone around you expects you to act this way. So it's like when you don't act that way, they take it as a, you're a fringe personality or something, or, you know. And I understand, because culture is so ingrained in the human brain, where we create these tribes and then we assign value based on if someone follows the rules of the tribe. So learning the new culture is difficult because they're all implicit rules. They don't really, everyone else here knows what to do, but I don't. That's, I guess, is the best way to say it. So when I ask people like you and those in authority, they're like, I've never been asked that question before. Let me help you, you know? So it's a very vulnerable position to put yourself in. And that can be intimidating. It's a bit difficult, but I've been able to survive and get through it.
I'm just imagining that, you know, the common assumption is with college, most of the learning happens inside the classroom. But for students from different backgrounds and cultures, it's like you're learning everywhere. And mm-hmm. that can be pretty exhausting, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I learn from watching people. I just watch how other students behave or where they go and kind of not mimic. What's the word?
Imitate
what they do. Yeah. I don't know. So that helps. Because blending in is such a thing to do if you want to not appear weird, I guess.
100%.
Yeah. So, yeah. And the problem is not to lose who you are in that process. You want to change a lot about yourself. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but
100%. You know, it's interesting. I am 48 years old. I was adopted. I was born in Seoul, South Korea in 1975, they think. I don't know what my birthday is. And some kind gentleman brought me to an orphanage. And then at 7 months, I was adopted into a family in Baldwinsville, which is 20 minutes outside of Syracuse. Okay. And I grew up in a white family, and I grew up in a very white community, and being other, I'm very familiar with white culture, but I never will be mm-hmm. white culture at the same time.
Yeah.
And so growing up with that awareness that, you know, wherever I go, especially in a predominantly white community, my outside is a liability. Being Asian is a liability. It's if some kid is going to target somebody to make fun of, I'm an easy target because I look different and there's yeah. nothing I can do about it. The impact it had was it made me very observant. And it was mm-hmm. a survival. It was yeah. a survival. I have to make sure that I minimize my difference as much as possible. So very similarly, observing how people act, what they said, what they didn't say, in order to quote unquote pass mm-hmm. as much as I could to kind of soften the otherness so that maybe I can exist in some degree of peace, yeah. but it definitely had an impact on how I moved through the world, how I saw the world. And so it's not exactly what you're describing and what you're going through, but I kind of can relate in some ways, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good parallel. So I liked how you described it as survival instincts, like, cause that's basically what you're doing, you know? This is an entirely new place, and like, I want to be here, and in order to do that, you have to adopt some of the practices that other people will do.
And I liked how you were talking about how you don't want to lose yourself at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because,
like, you know, like, I like wearing my cultural regalia, you know? I get looks all of the time because everyone else just wears, you know, I don't know, Nike or whatever. And I like those things too. Like, I actually have Nike on, I think. But also, I guess part of it is to educate people that there are different cultures here.
Yeah.
We are here, you know. So that I don't want to lose that because we've lost so much already. Speaking of indigenous people. So that's mostly what I meant when I said I don't want to lose that part.
Yeah. ASU is a very interesting place because we have a history of, you know, relative to other institutions, a history of inclusivity that, you know, has historically been like more so than other institutions, I guess. But we've got this student population where it's like, it's a predominantly white private institution. And so mm-hmm. we have the existence of different backgrounds and cultures, but it's a weird vibe. I don't know how to describe it. You know, there's not necessarily a blending happening, like an interaction, like a genuine inclusivity.
Yeah, there's like a clear, almost like a class type distribution, where there's different classes on campus that are represented, one being the dominant one, and, you know, the rest being the other, I guess, from an actual anthropological perspective.
I'm just really grateful that 113 exists. You know, yeah. Can you imagine if it didn't?
Yeah, yeah. It's like home.
Yeah. it's literally in a home. You mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
It creates that sometimes like the idea of attachment theory like comes into play, I think. I use it as like a frame of reference. So it's like this becomes your anchor, you know, and then you can go out into the world, into the campus, and knowing that you can always come back here and kind of remind yourself who you are again.
Yeah.
You know,
recharge. And then go back out.
And then go
and drain your battery. No, I'm just kidding. And it's not an office building. We got comfortable chairs. So, yeah, it's comfortable here. I like it.
Awesome. Could you tell us a little bit about your move-in experience and like, what were your first few days on campus like?
Move-in was pretty stressful. Everything was last minute. Like, I did everything last minute. Like, check all the emails last minute. I had to coordinate with my mother where to park. So it was like, go, 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 go. You know, and when I got here, they were less strict about everything than I was expecting. Like, South Campus is like, you just can kind of do whatever, like, you can park anywhere. They allowed you to park without the pass that they gave me. So she was able to, you know, just park and then we could move in. So it was stressful coming up, But then when I got here, it was like, oh, this is easy. Yeah. Yeah. So that was a relief.
Nice.
First few days was pretty difficult because, like, I didn't, like I said, I did everything last minute. I didn't look at the maps of the place. So first day of class was finding my classrooms.
And, oh, man.
And, you know, all of that. So that was, it was my fault, but it was, I know where everything is now, you know. I spent the time to find all of the buildings and all of the individual classrooms. So, I don't know. I'm a pretty chaotic person, so.
I was just going to ask, like, the last minute thing, is that just a pattern, or was...
No, that's just me.
Okay.
That's just me, man. Like, I'm just chaotic in general, so... that always happened throughout my life.
That's interesting. Well, it worked out.
Yeah, it did.
At what point did you realize that you were experiencing feelings of loneliness? Or at what point were you aware that you were missing a sense of belonging here?
Maybe like the third week. Because I didn't have... I hadn't really made any friends yet, so course was getting harder, so I hadn't really have a social network to rely on, which usually I would. So that was kind of like, those two things together were like a domino effect. It was like, okay, I need to make some friends, because... that'll help me, like, stay on track, find, in much like this place, serve as a comforting sense of belonging. So, yeah, it was a couple weeks in that I realized that it was kind of lonely here without, because you can get lost in such a sea of people. Like 20,000 or so people here, you know, you can get lost if you don't advocate for yourself and find your way, I guess.
100%. Definitely. When you, and I think it's really interesting that you tie those things together, that you connect those dots in terms of going through the experience of, you know, challenges inside the classroom, and then linking it to, because that kind of can pull the rug out from under you, like, mm-hmm. kind of maybe shake your confidence a little bit, or make you feel a little bit concerned about, you know, can I do this? Am I in the right place? And then that can lead to, wow, I'd really like to lean on somebody right now, but there's okay. nobody to lean on at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because we are social creatures, and academic performance is tied to, like, that sense of belonging. Like, if you don't feel you belong or you don't feel safe, you know, your grades can drop. So for, like, quiet introverts like me, it's like, I guess I have to, you know, but it's for your own good, you know.
How did you cope with your feelings of loneliness and lack of sense of belonging? Do you remember? Go ahead.
Yes. Well, I just had to be vulnerable. I reached out to Bailey, and I was like, I heard there's an Indigenous student club here or program, and I was wondering if I can come to a meeting and meet some people, you know. That was one way. So I came to the meetings, I met a few people, made some friends, you know, and, you know, I also explored other clubs like Pride Union, Philosophy Club. I think that was all, no, but I just had to, like, get myself out there. Like, I, talking to people was my need. So I did that. Working out can help too, because loneliness manifests itself as like stress, and working out helps stress go away. At least it like releases endorphins in the brain, you know. So that helps. Just keeping up with your diet and your sleep schedule, because those can make things worse. Like, it can make stress worse. So I didn't want that to happen. It takes a lot of discipline and work, but I survived, I guess.
Do you mind sharing a little bit about first how you found the clubs and how you found Bailey?
She had emailed me one time. She has this list or whatever, and I was put on that list. So I had like the emails about the Native Student Program, but I never really looked at them, I guess. Because in those first 2 weeks, there are so many emails that you get, like professors, office emails like the academics or the registrar or the campus safety. You get all of those introductory emails like, hey, welcome, this is what you need to know, stuff like that. So Bailey's emails kind of got lost in all of those. So I didn't even bother. I was like, this is too stressful, I'm just going to block it out. But once everything settled down after the first couple of weeks, I went to the place where you find all the clubs anyways.
Student Center.
Yeah, where the student government is.
And, yes.
I was like, is there any Indigenous student clubs here? And she was like, yeah, I can give you a link to all of our registered clubs. And I had also seen their Instagram page. So I had noticed those things, and I just had to send an email and follow up and be like, hey, can I join? So, yeah.
Do you mind sharing a little bit about what it was like to kind of enter new spaces for the first time, like your thought process? Did you have to like pump yourself up to go, or was it just like, all right, I decided to go and I'm going, I'm doing it?
Yeah, it was like the shower thoughts at first, like, oh, I can do this, I can do this. And then when you step into the building, it's like, I can't do this. Like, so I had to like kind of like pump myself up, because it's intimidating when you finally get to the place where you have to talk to people. So that was a hurdle that I had to get over. But yeah.
Are you comfortable talking a little bit about, because I identify as an introvert as well, although I'm kind of like an outgoing introvert, but I need that time to recharge. I need that alone time kind of thing. Have you cracked the code of small talk?
Not really, no. I despise small talk.
Me too.
It's fake. Like, it's ritualistic. It's theater. It's like, I just want to know. Like, I'm a big fan of objective-based conversations. Or, yeah, where you talk about one thing and then you get it over with. It's not like going through the theater of small talk, you know? So I haven't, no, to answer your question, no, I have not cracked that, the secret.
Yeah, human interaction is fascinating, you know?
It is, yeah. Like, if you think about how Americans will say, how are you? It's not actually saying, how are you? They're inviting you to enter sort of a social contract between you and them, And depending on your response is how they assign value to you. Sorry, I'm speaking in a lot of anthropology and psychology, but I find that interesting.
I find that very interesting too.
So like, that's what small talk is like, how long can you engage in a social contract with me? And they'll kind of assign value on you if you can or not.
It's funny, like, going back to like my upbringing around adolescence, I kind of felt this pressure that like the community, my family, whoever was trying to like put me in a box, or like, and I think that's what they do in general with people, you know, fit this role of feminine, like fit this role of what, you know, an appropriate acting, whatever 13-year-old should be or whatever. And I remember like intentionally going against that, like
rebellious spirit.
Exactly. I'm not gonna jump through your hoops. Like, I'm not going to. So then I kind of at the time consciously decided I wasn't gonna grow up.
Yeah.
But now at 48, it kind of screwed me, because it's like I'll have to interact with like people who did grow up.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm still like that 13-year-old kid. It's like, hi, like I don't know how to engage with them.
Yeah.
So I guess like it's not the best approach, because eventually you do have to like interact with people, and it's like, oh, I should have built those social skills back then. But yeah,
that's kind of, I agree with that a bit, because I'm the same way. Like, I'm rebellious. Like, I paint my nails, I dress differently, you know. So I understand where you're coming from when you say you're sort of rebelling against the system or whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting, because then it's like those social interactions that, you know, your social skills toolbox that I should have been developing, like I just was delayed, and so I didn't learn certain things that like now at 48, like I should know. People expect me to know. All right. So we kind of touched on the next question, which was, what steps did you take to figure out the places and spaces on campus where you did find your sense of belonging? And so you talked about reaching out to Bailey and going to Shine Student Center and looking for a list of student orgs to join. Do you mind going into a little bit more description about the spaces and people who do provide a sense of community for you, and maybe how you go about maintaining those relationships?
So 113 is a good place. It's free and open. I just wish it was open longer, because it closes at like 7, but like there's a kitchen here, you know, it's just a very good place to be. And, you know, it offers all the things you need, a place to charge your stuff. This is a good place. I like it better than the library, because that's usually full. And there's not a lot of quiet places, but this place is always open. So it's close to the campus. And, like, I can just walk to class whenever I need to. If I don't want to do that, then I'll go to the library, I'll go to Shine, get some Panda Express or whatever. Another place I usually go is probably the computer labs in ECS. It's a nice place to just work on, you know, grind the homework or whatever. What was the other?
How do you go about maintaining those relationships?
Oh, okay. So it just takes effort, I guess. I just have to. At the end of the day, you have to make time for social interaction. And it can be hard, because you have 1,000 other things that, I don't want to say more important, but it's like you have 5 courses and maybe a couple labs, you know. So there's a lot on your plate. But make time for social interaction takes effort, and that's just, if I don't do that, then it makes me sad, I guess. So I have to make that effort, and sometimes it means just I don't get to go to an event or something or like that. Like there's a sacrifice they have to make. But, well, sacrifice isn't the right word, because that means you're giving up something, but it's like you're gaining something. So making time for friends is, it takes effort. And it changes from semester to semester too. Like last year was easy because it was, there was less pressure, but this, I feel like I have more pressure this semester. So I just, adulting is, I don't know how you do that. Because it's like, it's just so complicated. And sometimes I feel like I have to plan and regiment everything. And that's just, I don't know, it's dehumanizing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's a sweet spot somewhere, and I'm still trying to find it. So, and it's different for everybody. So, I just exploring that now is good to. I just have to find it, I guess.
Yeah, college is really interesting because it's like, it's interesting how, like, as a staff, I have to work, like, you know, 8:30 to 5 every day, Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. And being a full-time student, your schedule's a little bit more flexible. But I feel like you guys do, like, way more work. I don't know. It's because your evenings are taken over, too. And your weekends are taken over. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you might not be physically having to be somewhere from 8:30 to 5 every day, but something's eating at you every day to do something.
Yeah, that can be rough for you know, especially first in like me, where it's like everything on your plate is just thrown at you, and figure it out, you know. So, like, it's helpful to talk to other people, because I wouldn't be able to fully think about possibilities without another perspective. So maybe if we can tie it back, it's like talking to people also helps me figure out my own problems and, you know, how to approach them. You know, a diverse perspective is better than a single perspective. So I don't feel overwhelmed, and like, yeah.
I think what might be significant is to find the people that you do authentically connect with, who can provide those perspectives. You know, I think that's the part that is really key. Mm-hmm. It's not the quantity of people, you know, it's the quality. And I think that having those people in your life can make a world of difference. It's just finding the right people.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And that's one of the great places about SU, is there's so many people. You can find them. You just have to be willing to look, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
So at this point in your time at SU, do you feel like you've been able to find that sense of belonging?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like being at home now.
Oh, so that's wonderful.
It's really fun. It just takes that. You have to get over the hurdle. So I feel comfortable. I have friends. I have somewhat of a routine, you know. I always wanted to be here, so I don't see another place for me, I guess. And I just love that.
That's wonderful. And so finally, what words of encouragement or advice do you have for incoming students who might be experiencing similar feelings of loneliness or isolation? And if you don't mind, speak directly to them and give them your words of wisdom.
Well, I guess just for any incoming students, it would be just explore the place, you know. That's what I did. I explored the buildings, and you can meet a lot of people in those buildings. So that's kind of how I made friends, because there would always be someone in the corner studying or something. I would just walk up to them. So you can do that. Generally, people won't be like, get away from me or whatever. I met friends in class. Someone who just... We shared already something in common. So... I know I keep saying this, but making friends is one of the best things that helped me. So having that was helpful. So that helps your loneliness. It helps your isolation. I think is that good?
That's fantastic. I really appreciate this, Nate.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure. Yes. All right. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Lonely Campus Podcast. I'm Armando Martinez, Director of Inclusion and Belonging. If you found this podcast helpful, let us know and feel free to share other ways we can make campus more welcoming and inclusive to all.